Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. And if you would like to support the podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/required reading. Our guest today is Lena Kuyumjan. She is a comedy writer from Berkeley, California, who has written for Fox, Amazon, HBO Max, and the Disney Channel. And she says she will be a memoirist when she stops being scared of everyone she knows. Hello.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Our book today is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier from 1938. I read this, I think about 4 years ago, like 2019, when I first moved to LA, and I didn't realize it until I was going over my notes just like an hour ago. I was 21, the same age as the protagonist in the book, which was, yeah, very interesting. And I was introduced first to this book by the film, the Hitchcock film. And for those who don't know, the book follows an unnamed protagonist who has a whirlwind engagement with wealthy widower Maxim de Winter, and upon arriving at his estate, finds herself sort of haunted by the reputation of his dead first wife, the glamorous Rebecca. The book is from 1938, bad year, rough year. some good things that happened. Snow White comes out and Superman makes his debut, and the rest is really bad. And nothing else good certainly happened. Daphne du Maurier is really interesting. So her whole family is creatives. Her parents were both actors. Her dad was also a manager. Uncle was a playwright. Her grandfather was a cartoonist who created the character of Svengali, which I realized I always thought was a real person. Well, it's not.
Interesting.
And her cousins were the Llewellyn Davies boys who were the inspiration for Peter Pan.
Oh my gosh.
Incredible.
Wait, I didn't know any of this. I did a little like dive onto Reddit where people have some insane theories about the book that we can discuss later. But yes. People were saying that like she also was bisexual and then ended up in like a traditional sort of conservative marriage. And so that you can see that so much in like the two women in the book.
Yeah. It was not her first novel, but she was 31 when it was published. She describes the book as like a novel of jealousy, and she did marry this man. There wasn't like a glamorous first wife, but there was a glamorous previous fiance, I think, they ended up not getting married. Yeah. So just a little hint of that. And there's some fun quotes when she like started writing it. She had to deal with her publisher, and she would be like, I cannot send you this disgusting miscarriage of a first draft. No. And some really fun stuff there. And it was an immediate yes. Oh my God. And it was an immediate success. It was named National Book Award for Favorite Novel of the Year. And I think the BBC occasionally does like a big read where it asks everyone to vote on like their favorite novels. And so I think this was like number 14 of like, you know, all time novels, and deserves it.
Absolutely.
So what's your story with this book? I was so interested. How did this first come into your life?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I got like a big box of books from my grandmother who had all these like really beautiful, I mean, I know people can't see me, but I'm holding up like the most beautiful copy of Rebecca. So there were all these like really old books, but they all were either classics that I had like already read, or they just had like the most severe sounding titles, and they were things that like maybe weren't that good that had been lost to the test of time. And then there was this book, Rebecca, which to me sounded like really modern and interesting. And I asked my mom about it, and she was like, oh yeah, that's good. And so I started reading it, and it's like interesting rereading it because it starts out so starkly without really a hint of what's to come. But I think I just sort of was like gripped and all in from the beginning.
Yeah. And so you were in high school, and had said you had like read a lot of classics. You were a big reader at the time.
I was, yeah. And so, yeah, I think I was like maybe 17. Ooh. And I feel like maybe I had also just read like Tess of the D'Urbervilles. And so I think I was like expecting something like that. And then it was just so different. Like it does feel really modern aside from some more problematic views.
I was such a fan of the Hitchcock movie and still am. And I didn't realize until like a moment ago of like, oh, that was like 2 years after the novel had come out. And it felt like I watched it probably in like 2018, 2017 for the first time. But I automatically was like, this book has been a huge cultural figure for like
Yeah.
much longer than that. And I know there was a recent movie that shall not be discussed. I did not read it. I did not look at it because I was like, I can't. It just won't be.
Yeah, because I actually haven't seen the Hitchcock, and now I'm feeling like I might watch that tonight. But the more recent one, I feel like I know I watched it. It like went in, it went out. I don't remember it. I don't think I felt like it was as it should be, and that's sort of all there is to say.
Yeah. The Hitchcock film, I mean, it was my introduction to it, and it is fantastic. It's, my favorite Hitchcock film. But it's also just like there is no way on earth Armie Hammer, even pre whatnot, could ever be Laurence
No,
Olivier,
no. Okay, also my question for you, I guess maybe it's different
Yeah.
because you didn't read the book first, but like, how do you imagine? I imagine Maxim being so hot.
Yes, you have to. And
Yeah.
he's very in the film, he's very like 1940s hot. Like there's the very slim mustache. And I think like there's such like rigidity in him, like absolute ice cold. Yeah, I think Olivier was like the perfect person to cast because he has this like aura of you have to respect him. And like
Yeah.
it's so, and Joan Fontaine plays Mrs. De Winter and is just this tiny little mouse, which is so great.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm excited to
Yeah.
watch.
It's, I mean, it's great, and it starts with that wonderful. The first line is iconic of I last night I dreamt I went to Manderley again. And it starts with that in the film as well. And as good as it is, as much as I love it, I am like, what is what is so magical about this first line of last night I went to Manderley, I dreamt I went to Manderley again.
Yeah, and even just like the name Manderley, I feel like it like evokes this like kind of magical place and like the rhododendrons and the azaleas and it, like I think she even says that it's like I imagine them being like 18 feet tall, it's like something really ridiculous,
Yeah.
the blood red.
Yeah, there's such like I think I'm definitely not a reader who loves like a lot of scene setting, but there are like she describes them, there's like maliciousness to it. And like you said, there's blood and there's like dark marriages between them. Everything is, oh, here. The rhododendrons, yeah, exactly like you said, stood 50 feet high, twisted and entwined with a host of nameless shrubs. Poor bastard things that clung about their roots as though conscious of their spurious origin. It's just like, it's so
Delicious.
delicious. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. I think it's often described as like gothic. People describe it as a ghost story, and that's not quite true because I think that's much more like there is no physical ghost. It's
No,
just
that's like much
someone.
more literal. Yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
I would need to reread my Year of Rest and Relaxation to see if I really stand
Oh.
by this. But for some reason, it kept popping into my head as I reread Rebecca because I was like, the way that like place is being written about, and then there's this person with this sort of like at times unlikable but very relatable like inner monologue in this place with this like intense relationship to place. It just kind of was like giving me that vibe. And I need to like reread my
Yeah.
relaxation and see if that really tracks.
That's so wild because I was thinking about rereading. I've also read my Year of Rest and Relaxation. I was thinking yesterday I should reread it. You don't know why, of like, other than I'm in a phase of, minimal activity, maybe. But I love that you bring up that because are you familiar, the same author also wrote Eileen. Are you familiar
Yeah.
with that?
Yeah. Love.
I one of my favorite books and movies, and the that book is all about, very similar to this one, is all about obsession between women, and the woman that Eileen is obsessed with is named Rebecca.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's definitely like some sort of parallel, I think, with like the writing style and like the interiority and just like these like things you would never say out loud, and they're very unlikable, but then they're just so relatable.
Yes. It's astonishing how, throughout all of it, how so relatable it was. And I was astonished reading it about how much it's about youth and childhood and growing up. I was like, so excited you picked this, and I had no idea that it would be like so perfect for the podcast. I was so
I'm so glad.
excited.
Reading it at 17, I think I also reread it at maybe 22, and then reading it now in my 30s, it seemed so different to me because there were like all these little things where like I saw no issue at the time that I first read it because I was also in that same like headspace. And like now in my 30s, like the little things like kind of like creeping around because you don't want the staff to see you. Like when she takes, I think, 8 crumpets and goes out and eats them in the woods. And like, that is so relatable. And like, as an adult woman, I'm like, if I'm staying in someone's house, I'm like, no, I'm not gonna go secretly eat something. But I have the urge and I have the thought. And like, when you are that age, it's like, it would never occur to her to be like, we're gonna fire Mrs. Danvers. You know what I mean?
Yes. Oh my gosh. So for those who haven't read it, Mrs. Danvers is the lead housekeeper who is what bothers me so much about like film history and myself is Mrs. Danvers is played to absolute perfection. And for the life of me, I can never remember the actress's name, but I'm looking it up right now because she deserves it. But she is this extremely severe, intense woman, Judith Anderson. Must we all remember Judith Anderson? Write it down. But Mrs. Danvers is like clinging to the remembrance of Rebecca. It is always like, this is what Mrs. De Winter did. And Mrs. Danvers also was like with Rebecca when she was a child, has been her caretaker all of this time. And is just like one of the best literary characters ever. She's
100%.
incredible. And there are these fantastic scenes where she corners our character and is just like vibrating with intensity. And I think you mentioned this, of like, there's a lot of ways to read these relationships. There's a lot of like, it's like a queer tome, certainly. I feel like the best books on this podcast are the ones where I'm like, ugh, I don't even know. I have nothing to say. It's so good.
Yeah, it's like structured almost like a movie, I would say. And it's like, it has just like to the very end, just these twists and turns that like I did not see coming the first time at all. So.
Yeah. So much so. And the film makes changes because it did come out in 1940. It's like the height of the Hays Code. So the big reveal is that Maxim, the husband, does kill Rebecca. And I think it's twisted in the book where she, or in the film, where instead of a gunshot, she like falls and hits her head while they're having this big confrontation. But even in the book, there is this sort of like forgiveness for Max, even though he is, you know, a murderer, because it's revealed she has this like fatal sort of uterine cancer illness. So there's discussion of like she goaded him into it. She has this incredible power over everyone.
Yeah, she's in every object. She's in the memories of the staff, every conversation she comes up. And like, that's an interesting choice to make Maxim less culpable in the movie. I will say, when I first read this, like, when I found out that he had murdered Rebecca, my take was the same as the protagonist, where I was just like, oh, huh, phew, she was terrible and he didn't love her. All is well.
Yes.
And so it was shocking a bit this time around, but it really only took me like 5 more pages before I was like rooting for them to get away with it. Like the first time I read it, I found it incredibly romantic that like they shared this secret, which might explain some of the dating experiences I went on to have, not with any murderers, but just that I was like, oh, great, there's no issue here. Like this is fine.
Yes.
And so like this time it felt more jarring to me, and I was asking myself, like, in the context of the story, not in real life because no one deserves to die, but in the context of the story, like, was it earned that she died? And it's like at times she's kind of written like a psychopath, but at other times I'm like, oh, I think as an older person I see a little bit more of myself in her, where it's like she's getting what she wants. She loves herself. She is living a very full life on her own terms. And I think it's a little bit of a cop out that the author does not tell us what it was that she revealed to Max when she
Yes.
knows who she really is.
Yeah, there's these moments, and I think it's like motivate. She again, like in the goading of the final moments, I think there's Max says, like, she revealed to me horrible things beyond description. And yeah, we don't know. I think like
Yeah.
the worst is like she's really cruel to this mentally handicapped boy who like lives on the estate. There's discussion of Danvers mentions when she's a child, she's like whipping this horse until it bleeds, but it's like really tiny pieces. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
and one of the
delicious.
things is like she was having her friends over at Manderley, and I was like, well, that seems reasonable unless they mean it in like a more like veiled 1930s way where I was like, is she having like sex parties? I think yes, maybe. Because otherwise it's like, well, that's reasonable. She lives there.
Yeah, it's her house. She is having an incestuous relationship with her cousin, which is revealed near the end.
Yes.
But I love that her cousin is like, yeah, we fucked. What of it?
Yeah.
It really is. He's like, and I'm proud of it too.
Yeah.
It's
And seems like
crazy.
on board to maybe have a kid, and it's like, oh, maybe don't do that for just how genetically
No.
you are.
The characters are wild. Jack Favell is the cousin and is just not equally delicious because we can't compete with Rebecca.
No.
But one of the greatest little nuggets of like writing insight that I've ever heard was one of the writers for It's Always Sunny said like these characters have to believe in their worldview 100%. Like we as audience members think this is absurd, but they have to be 100% in on it. And all of these characters are so 100% in on whatever they are. It's
Yeah,
fantastic.
absolutely. I think like especially like the way like Mrs. Danvers will sort of like be in and out of her like professional role and then like have
Yeah.
these like moments of like it's doing things that are like insane, like telling the protagonist to jump out the window. It's like, but she's like
Yes.
100% in that.
Yeah, and there's when she gets to Manderley, Max sort of has told Mrs. Danvers, I don't remember which one it is, but like, we're living in the East Wing now. We've never lived there. We always live in the West Wing, but we're living in the East Wing now. And the second Mrs. De Winter finds herself in Rebecca's room in the old wing of the house, and Mrs. Danvers comes in and is like, if I knew you wanted to be here, we could have been here every day. Let me show you her hairbrushes. Let me show you this. Let me show
Yeah.
you that. Here's her final outfit and her nightgown. And there's such an incredible, like, she's suddenly like just bursting forth of like, let me tell you, I've been waiting. And it's only been like a year. Yeah.
Yeah. And the nightgown still smells like Rebecca. She's like, we
Yeah,
could have been
there's,
in here sniffing her things the whole time.
oh my God, we, Danny, if that's all it took, yeah. And the writing is so sensual. Like you smell everything. You are so deeply rooted in the narrator's perspective. I noticed especially in the first half, maybe she'll go into these sections of daydreaming where she's like, I think one of the big ones that struck me is when she and Maxim get engaged, and she's like, and the maitre d' would bring us a bottle of champagne, and then Maxim would stand up, and then everyone would cheer, and then Maxim is like, obviously we won't have a big wedding. You don't need that. Obviously, we're fine.
Yeah.
You know, like youth is such a huge part of this novel. And so, like, there's so many times where Maxim is like, I'm old enough to be your father. But there's not a lot of difference sometimes between a husband and a father. But, like, so telling, yeah.
Yeah, no, I had a tough time reading it this time around with like how much he loves the childlike qualities in her and like how kind of icky it is that he's like, oh, something has been lost and I'll never get it back. And it's like, yeah, the things that he hates about Rebecca, it's like not all of them are really all that forgivable. It feels like he hates that she's an adult woman and he picks this like child to be his next partner and wants to keep her that way. And like also really does not hold her hand or help her at all as she makes this transition into this new place. It's like, I think maybe a tour of Manderley would have been nice. So she knows
Yep.
she's going.
Something that happened a lot that that hurt me so much for her is they have this dog named Jasper, who's very, very affectionate to the protagonist. And there are all these refrains of like, he treats me like how I treat this dog, of just like a little pat on the head, and that's it. Yeah. And like those moments that really bring them together, where they're really intimate, are like, he'll finally say, I murdered my wife. And the line is something like, and we kissed like lovers who had never kissed before or something.
Oh
It's
yeah, that got him
sexy. Yeah.
all horned up talking, finally confessing. And I think that's why like the novel is so well structured, because it's like there is this distance between them and it is Rebecca. And when he can finally say what happened, then suddenly it's like, oh, distance is gone. We're making out furiously in the library.
Yeah, there's a point where you're like, is this the first time you guys have been intimate? Like, it's hard to tell.
I was wondering that too, because it's like they were asking her, like Beatrice, the sister's asking, like, could you be pregnant? And she's like, no, definitely not. And I'm like, oh, maybe they haven't slept together, which is also, he never even said, I love you until after the confession. Like, that's insane.
They're fully married, yeah, and never says it. And when I was reading it, not from like a lurid perspective, but like it's such a book about like a loss of innocence. When you mentioned it, when he finally tells her about the murder, he says like, "I have killed you in the same way that I killed Rebecca. Like it's actually worse. You were a child an hour ago, and now you're not." So I thought like, she's definitely a virgin. She's like absolutely positive, even though they don't say that. So like that scene of like losing the virginity seems like it should be like a tentpole scene, and we never see it. And also, like, good, you know?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And like one of the things I think I really related to, like when I was in high school reading this, is like I felt so much anxiety about like going into any sort of sexual situation where I was like, I feel like I'm supposed to know what to do, but I don't. And it's, I think that's a common anxiety for some people, but like a lot of my friends just kind of like rolled up their sleeves and like gave a blowjob their best try and were not anxious at all. But I think like seeing this person who was like not knowing what to do, but still got to like be with this like older, very desirable man with this amazing country estate, I think really resonated for me. And like, I was like, okay, she's figuring it out and she's okay.
There is something so comforting. Like, even though the relationship is very icky, she does need a parent more than she needs a boyfriend. So
Yes.
it's like comforting that, yeah, that he can do that. Absolutely. I was a bit of a late bloomer, and in hindsight, like, no, I bloomed at the correct time, actually. I bloomed when I was ready to, you know?
Yeah, you don't want to bloom too early. That also seems traumatic. So you want to bloom just on a good schedule for you.
Yes, the bloom will come when it is right, hopefully. May we all be so lucky. Yeah, I think I also, there's a strong consciousness throughout the book of the passage of time and unstoppable change, which was so affecting to me. I'm looking just at the top of chapter two, and I think it's probably throughout the book, but like the first sentence of every chapter is killer. She goes, "We can never go back again. That much is certain. The past is still too close to us." And the thing that in the last like year or so that has really made me conscious of the passage of time is watching professional sports. To be like, oh my God, it's almost the
Interesting.
Super Bowl again. Like, we've already gone through like a whole, it's college football's already over. That's the thing that is doing it for me.
I completely understand that. I saw a, I think it was a tweet today that was like, if you want to know how long 2024 has been, there was an Olympics and we already forgot about it. And I'm like, yeah, the Olympics were a lifetime ago. Like, I would not have said that
Yes.
this year.
My kitten showed up right as we were starting the call, and I was just like, oh, I've only had her for 9 months, but it feels like forever. I also, it's really bad. I got her the day after I was most recently on set, and I think I got her and I was like, oh, I'm never getting cast again, am I? Like, this is the end. This beautiful little kitten is a new chapter. Well, yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully not.
No.
Whew.
It's only been 9 months. That is, she's a baby.
Yeah, she's a Pisces. We haven't even gotten to her first birthday. Yeah. It's been 6 months. Oh my God, it's been 6 months. But yeah, on Killer First Lines, chapter three, I wonder what my life would have been today if Mrs. Van Hopper had not been a snob.
Oh, perfection.
Mrs. Van Hopper is this fancy old lady who has hired our protagonist as a companion in Monte Carlo, which is frankly a job I think I would love, of just being a professional
Absolutely.
companion. I mean, she hates it, but she is like, my job is like to go fetch her medicine and play bridge, which there's a great app where you can learn to play bridge, and it's very fun. It's a really
Okay,
good
I'm
app.
very interested in that. I've been feeling like I need a social game, so maybe this is for me.
Yes. It's so complicated, and I don't think it needs to be. Every 10 lessons, they're like, okay, get ready. We know you don't want to do this. Here's how we bet in bridge. So,
Oh
and
no.
now they're points. Yeah, it's so. By the time we've been like explaining game rules for more than 5 minutes, I'm dead. I've gone.
I'm mentally somewhere else. I am on an island. I am not here. I love that Mrs. Van Hopper is like so uncouth and also American. You know what? We've earned
Yeah.
it.
Absolutely. And so put off and grouchy that her companion has, fallen in love. She's mostly angry that like this social nobody has skipped over her and is like talking to the coolest man at the club.
Yeah, and didn't include her in the process. Like, I think if she had felt included, maybe she'd be a little on board. And then she does warn the narrator, like, this is not going to work out for you. You're making a mistake, which is interesting.
Absolutely. I have it right here. She goes, "Of course, you know why he is marrying you, don't you? You haven't flattered yourself that he's in love with you. The fact is that empty house got on his nerves to such an extent he nearly went off his head. He admitted as much before you came into the room. He just can't go on living there alone." And that's
Oh,
the end of a chapter. Yeah.
I would never recover if someone said that to me.
Never. Oh my God.
And she might not be wrong. I mean, it's, I don't know. I think the thing that's interesting too is like in the chapters where she's like, where the narrator is like farther in the future and looking back on the past, like it sounds like they get to a more adult relationship and they're like all over the place traveling and having a more equal partnership, it sounds like, and she's able to look back and like see the part that youth played in their relationship at the time. So it seems like they
Yeah.
do get somewhere better, but Mrs. Van Hopper is right.
100%. Yeah, they parts of the narrative are told, from the future looking back after the very last page of the book, and it's so well done. Basically they go on an adventure to prove adventure. They go to London to prove that Max, quote unquote, didn't kill Rebecca. And when they finally get home to Manderley, it's on fire. It's burning down. And I notice they never say Manderley is on fire. They say like the sky is too bright for 2 a.m. And in the last sentence, she's like, and there were ashes everywhere, but never says this is on fire.
Oh, I didn't think that. That's very interesting. It's like, and it's as everything else in the book is written, it's like so full of like things for every sense, and so it feels like you're like breathing in the ashes as they're driving towards it. For some reason, I remembered that they said who had set the fire, or like I remembered it
Yes.
for some reason. Maybe that's like something that was in the most recent movie. I can't remember, but it's like. I didn't remember also that Mrs. Danvers had left. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Who do you think set the fire? It's Danvers, right?
Yes, that's how I read it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, because how can Manderley, even though it's Maxim's family property, how can Manderley survive without Rebecca? And now her memory is gone. She's fully been replaced. There's that fantastic moment, I think, after Maxim does the reveal, where Mrs. Danvers, or maybe it's one of the other servants, says something like, "Well, Mrs. De Winter always did this." And she goes, "I'm Mrs. De Winter now."
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. So much.
Oh, it's
She
delicious.
finally does it.
Yeah.
Side note, the most unhinged thing I saw on Reddit was someone has a brilliant theory. I wish I could give them credit, that Mrs. Danvers killed the original Rebecca when she was a baby and then changelinged her own baby in and raised that child and raised her to be a psychopath.
I love that. I don't think I buy into it. But something that I didn't catch until like the very beginning of this read is that Mrs. Danvers, the name, implies she was married.
Yeah, I always wondered about that.
Yeah. maybe she wasn't, and she just put that on. Just like as a woman in the 30s, I think it just makes life easier, probably, to tend to be married. But yeah, I read a novel maybe in like 2021 that's called Rebecca's Tale, which is like, I think beforehand, it's like from, I don't remember any of it. So, like, obviously not going to be as good as this at all, but I like, Annie is such a character I want to know more about. Yeah. And then she calls her Danny.
I know. And it's so sweet. And it's just like, I have a hard time, like, I think because the novel is so well told from the narrator's perspective, I have a hard time, like, then doing this, like, pivot to the sweet relationship that Rebecca and Danny share and, like, imagining what the like what that might be like. And then it's like her interacting with Favell is interesting as well, because it's like they're so different, and it's like she doesn't even really like him, but they're like teammates because they're the only two people sort of like carrying this torch for Rebecca.
Yeah, and that like Danvers seems so much more invested, but was not her lover, was not her blood kin. Yeah, just like what a tome. Like just one of the question at the end of the podcast is it required reading? And the answer is yes. Sorry.
100%.
The
In fact, read it more than once. Read it 2 or 3 times.
Read it once a year. I don't care, but
Absolutely.
like I was at my parents' house when you messaged me that you wanted to pick this book, and I had a copy here in LA, and I was so excited. I was like, yes, I could get an ebook, but I need a physical copy and I need it now. So I went out and I got this also really nice
Oh,
hardcover.
that's so sexy.
I know, but I was at the store. I called ahead because I always do used books. So I went to Wonder Book. I called, "Do you have it?" They said, "Yes, we have a couple copies." And I went, and they had a cover that had the movie poster on it. And I was so excited. It was very clear if I touched it, it would fall apart. So I did not buy it. But it was gorgeous. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds stunning.
And it was like really, the film is in black and white, but the photo was like so colorful. It was gorgeous. Although the poster, at least that is on Letterboxd and like the most popular poster, Joan Fontaine does not look like that. I don't know whose face is on that poster. Maybe it's Rebecca, but it does not look like Joan Fontaine.
That's rude. A
I know. Especially like Joan
little bit.
Fontaine is a huge actress, but
Yeah.
oh well. Yeah, reading this, I just feel like I feel so ready to write like a scholarly English class essay because I have so many quotes ready about youth, you know? I was too young. That was the trouble. I was stricken into shame and endured one of the frequent agonies of youth. And like, youth is such an indignity. I wished I was older.
Yeah, and I think it's just like it's written in a way that's like really universal, I think, of just like wishing you had a little more savvy. And I think there's such a contrast. It's like the way that she, like, when she's sitting at Rebecca's desk, it's like she keeps highlighting like Rebecca was so sure of herself. She knew what to do. She had people to correspond with and like everything. And I think it's like her youth, everything for the narrator. She is unsure. She doesn't know what to do, and she's hating herself for it.
Yes. There's such a perfect like demonstration of this. At some point, Rebecca or telling the second Mrs. De Winter is in, I think, Rebecca's office, and there's like a little Cupid figurine that she accidentally knocks off a shelf and it shatters. And so she's freaking out. She hides the shards in a waste paper basket. There's a detail where Mrs. Danvers goes through the trash cans every night before emptying them to make sure nothing good gets thrown away. And so the statue is missing. They start to blame one of the young groomsmen who's just like a kid. And she finally comes out and is like, "No, I did it and I hit it. And it's me." And everyone's like, "It's no big deal." Like, stay. But it's so childish. "I know I did that. I know for a fact I did that." One time when I was home by myself, when I was, I don't know, in middle school, I was playing with fire and I lit a tiny bit of the carpet on fire. And I think I was just like, yeah, weird. I don't know what happened there.
Something spontaneously happened without my input at all. My mom is like a strict, passionate recycler, and so she will do that when I'm home. And I'm like, it makes me be like, I'm gonna take my trash home because I can't have you going through it. It's just, and it's like, that is just such a thing of like, D Danvers has like complete control, is like always watching. And I think it's like also strange to me, like, the narrator never throws her under the bus. She doesn't say like, Mrs. Danvers like picked this costume for me and told me to do it. Like, she never
Yes.
goes to Maxim and is like, this woman is terrorizing me.
Yeah. And I think even Maxim at some point is like, we could get rid of her, man. You mentioned that. It just never occurs to her. But I'm so glad you brought up the dress scene because it's stunning. When they come home to Manderley, she has to do the rounds. I love everything about like posh British society and all of the rules. I think it's so funny. So first off, not naming the protagonist. I think when I saw the movie, I was like, this is the most brilliant thing a writer can do. I didn't know you could do this. And there's like very sparse detail about her, but the little details you do get are fantastic. So I think like she's definitely low class. I think she grows up in London and she's doing the rounds and everyone is like, Rebecca threw this costume party that was all the rage. You have to do it. You have to do it. She finally agrees. Danvers is like finally on her side and says like, here, I have a perfect costume. And turns out at like the biggest moment in the party, or the party is about to start, she comes down, she's so excited, and Maxim is horrified because this was Rebecca's costume and she looks exactly like her. And it ruins the whole party and she's freaking out and she's crying and sobbing, and it's the biggest betrayal in the world is about this costume party. Delicious.
And it is so brutal. Like, it is just, and then she sees Mrs. Danvers in the hallway and there's like pure evil on her face and triumph. It's so painful. And it's like, she has to go. She was so excited. And it's like, you can see this like sliding doors moment of like, if she had just worn something else, she would have had a wonderful time. Also really impressed that all these people who like are written as being in their 40s stay up dancing until 5 a.m. Like, wow, impressive. It's just, it is so devastating. And she never names Mrs. Danvers as being the source.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't, you're never given an explicit reason, but it is like, I don't want a tattle. And I should be able to handle this on my own. And it is like a weakness of my youth that there is so much. I wish I was older. I had a line highlighted because Maxim is finally interested in her. This is early on. Someone is finally interested in her. I was a person of importance. I was grown up at last. That girl who was tortured by shyness would stand outside the sitting room door, twisting a handkerchief in her hands, while from within came that babble of confused chatter so unnerving to the intruder. She had gone with the wind that afternoon. She was a poor creature, and I thought of her with scorn, if I considered her at all. And
wow.
She's not gone with the wind. She's there. She cannot be read.
Yeah. I think she perceives Mrs. Danvers as being like, I think just like higher status than she is. So it's like, I don't think you would go name somebody that you perceive to be like as your superior.
Absolutely. And there's some moment she is introduced to all of the staff, and I think she like drops a glove, and it is the worst thing she's ever done. She's freaked out about it. And ugh, what degradation lay in being young.
My heart really breaks for her too, that she's like wearing Rebecca's raincoat and like they didn't get her any new clothes. And it's like, she should not be reaching in the pocket and finding Rebecca's old handkerchief. Like, she should have her own raincoat.
Yeah, there's she really is. And every time I think about it more, the more I believe Mrs. Van Hopper in like, he just needed a wife and you were near and you were young enough to take the morsels that you are given, which I think is so typical of like your first relationships. She just has to be slotted in immediately, and she's haunted by all of these things. And something beautiful in the book and the film is that Rebecca's signature alone, this big swooping R, is a character unto itself. And she pulls out that handkerchief and there's that R. Oof.
Yeah, the writing, and like that she calls him Max, but it's like, yeah, the handwriting keeps coming up. It's like, it almost feels like it's its own character.
Yeah. Like you said, it is that self-assurance. It's that belief, even from the smallest detail, you can see that this is a person who is so sure of herself. Yeah.
What do we think of the character Frank? For some reason, this reading, I was like really interested in him.
Yeah. So Frank is like Maxim's business assistant, best friend. And yeah, in reading it this time, when the law starts to sniff around Max and starts to think that he committed murder, because Rebecca's body shows up. When she dies, she like is lost at sea. A body washes up. They say it's her. A year later, the day after the fancy dress party, Rebecca's real body shows up, and there's an inquest. And in these sequences, there's so much of like Colonel Julian, who functions as the detective, noticed like Max looked at Frank, and Frank looked at Max, and I looked at Frank, and then Colonel Julian noticed that I looked at Frank, and Frank looked at it. It's all of this stuff, and there's this real detachment between Max and Rebecca, and his relationship also with his new wife that made me, in this reading, think Max and Frank are lovers.
Ooh, I could see
I don't know,
that.
but yeah. I don't like, I would never bet on it. But yeah, that struck me this time because they're so close. And there's a
Yeah.
little hint of something between Frank and the new wife. There's sort of, I think Favelle at some point is like, "Oh, Frank, you tried, getting with Rebecca and it didn't work out." Oh. Yeah. What do you make of it?
Well, I wasn't sure because I think this time around, like the first time I took it for granted that like this man was just so devoted to Maxim. And like it is shocking, like when it's revealed that it's like, oh, Frank knows. And it's like he has kept
Yes.
this secret and it seems like he is willing to go to any lengths. And like hearing you say it now, I'm like, yeah, I could see Frank being in love with Maxim or them being in love with each other because that does feel like the closest, most real relationship.
Yeah.
The most honest relationship, and to a degree, maybe it's his position as like the Lord of Manderley, but it's like everybody seems to make these allowances. And I thought it was really interesting at the end that Maxim even says, like, well, Colonel Julian knows, he definitely knows,
Yes.
but like everybody was doing everything that they could except for the one man who made the boat to like
Yeah.
make sure that Max got away with it. And it's like
Yeah.
that's just status and position, which like that's a tale as old as time. And Frank also was like the person that the narrator seemed to like joke around with and be much more open with. And like she's asking him
Yeah.
questions that like she really should be asking her husband. Like, what was up with Rebecca? Like, I just thought it was like, oh, he ended up being this like very important character that I just like kind of overlooked the first time.
Yeah, and I have no memory of him in the movie. I'm sure he's like peripherally there, but there is this really interesting during those sequences where the narrator is like, Frank knows, Maxim doesn't know that Frank knows, and Maxim doesn't want Frank to know because he like doesn't want him to have this perception of him. I think that's something interesting of like Maxim. For all his coldness, like there's some really interesting scenes where Maxim becomes the child and the wife becomes the parent. And that's when she like really steps into herself and is like really ready. Like by the end, when they talk about sort of the current present day parts of their life, she is the caretaker and he is really frail. I loved that there are all these moments where she's like, I am not who I was 10 minutes ago. One of the few moments where she's talking from the present day, she's talking about like leaving their hotel room. And she goes like, here I say, we have lived, we have been happy. This has been ours. We leave something of ourselves. We can never be quite the same again. I have aged. I am not she who left him 5 minutes ago. She has stayed behind. I am another woman, older, more mature. And sometimes that's like, girl, that's really dramatic. But also that's what time feels like sometimes, especially when you're so young and like coming to grips with getting older. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think also when you're like living through something that's like big and dramatic, it does start to feel like time is divided into before and after. And I think like she does this like brilliant job. It like gave me chills of like writing about doing the mundane things that you do every day on this like really insane day where they're like the day that they're getting ready to like in the morning to drive to London and basically like find out if Maxim is going to get away with this or be like
Yeah.
death. And it's like she's talking about like taking a bath and it's like suddenly these things have all this meaning and it's like it does slow down time and make things feel different when you're like living through some sort of heightened event versus just like a random day that you'll forget about. And I think that's
Yeah.
executed really well here.
Yeah, she, like you said, because they're about to go see if Maxim is guilty or not, she's really bracing for impact. So there are all these moments of like, this might be the last time that we like have breakfast together. And I think that also, like, when I was reading the first half of it, I think I was really aware of like, she is telling her own story to herself as it is happening. And it's like impeding her ability to sort of be present and live in the moment. And yet, I think that was really like, I think I am still constantly unlearning, but repeating to myself, like, this is how I will remember these things as I am living them rather than living them. Yeah.
Yeah, that is, I think, such like a writer brain thing to do, to be like writing while you're
Yes.
doing it, and it does take you out of like what's actually happening. I think that's a really good point.
You mentioned in your bio becoming a memoirist, and there are like every little event is so much bigger the less you have lived, you know, it's a larger percentage. But yeah, I've started the first page of my memoir several times. I'm not going to write a full one, but I do have that first page.
Hell yeah.
When he proposes, she says, "Do you mean you want a secretary or something?" And he says, "No, I'm asking you to marry me, you little fool."
Yeah, he says a lot of things like that that are just like he calls her like a fool or an idiot, I think a bunch of times. And then like at one point he says like, "Oh, you're just as unintelligent as Mrs. Van Hopper or something." I'm like, he's like, and then he says a bunch of times like, "Oh, I've been a terrible partner to you," or like, "It was very selfish of me to marry you." And it's like he's not doing all that he could. If he wanted
No,
to, he
we've
would.
if he wanted to, he would. Yeah,
Yeah.
there's even like the next page, he says like it's a pity you have to grow up. He is really very forthright about I want a child bride.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And it's like, yeah, I think it's like there, it sounds like there were things about Rebecca that were legitimately, as we said earlier, there were things that were legitimately awful. And then it seems like there were things he just didn't like an adult woman, maybe.
100%. Yeah, he like she really a couple weeks ago, I did an episode with Taylor Ortega from Flash, and she used the phrase like standing in your power a lot. And so that's really stuck with me. And I think that's like the most, even with all of, like you said, the terrible things, the most threatening part of Rebecca to the narrator, to Maxim, is that she is so with it. She knows her power, and she is so more than anyone, she's like, she is statuesque to me in that she is stone. She is firm and planted.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting that like he kind of says this thing to her where he's like, "Do whatever you're gonna do. I don't care, but don't do it at Manderly." And it's like, in a way, it's like he's justifying it like he killed her for Manderly. But then it's also like odd because he seems like quite detached through a lot of the story where he's like, "Oh, it used to look like this, and then like Rebecca made it beautiful," and like, I don't know, like he sounds like he could take or leave it, and yet he's so passionate about it, apparently.
Yeah, and that like it has to have sort of a wife, it has to have a mistress, which is, you know, time-based and culture-based. But I think you mentioned like when they are having this trial, everyone seemingly in the town, they want the gossip, but they also want Max to stay where he is. And I think partly like when we're having this conversation, I was like, yeah, because he's the principal employer probably in the town. Like
Yeah.
they're, but at the same time, like if he goes, the second Mrs. De Winter becomes the mistress of the estate, and you know that would explode her. She like could not handle that at
Yeah.
all.
Yeah, it's like sad that as they're like driving back, she's like, "I can," like she finally had like stood up to Mrs. Danvers, and she's finally like she would be handling the menu, and like she had plans to be like enjoying herself there. And it is
Yeah.
sad that that doesn't actually happen. I did find myself like I would like set down the book and like wander out into my living room, and I was like, "Oh, I wish someone had set out a little buffet for me and like lit a fire and
Yeah.
cleaned everything up for me and made me tea." But that aspect seems really lovely. But I liked also that like they showed the ways in which it was not, in which you were like constantly watched, and like your undergarments had to be, you know, they were under scrutiny, and all of those little things
Yes.
would be hard, I think.
Yeah, it's absolute, like you said, scrutiny. And I love the part that you brought up earlier where she is like squirreling away food. I think that is like when I was in like college dorm rooms and like living with other people in the same space as me for the first time, like that's so relatable of like I don't want to be observed. And I think it's interesting that she becomes, you know, this high status person with no privacy. Yeah.
Yeah, and she's not used to being the person that is like calling the shots, and so it's so uncomfortable for her. Yeah,
Yeah.
I thought that was like really relatable.
For sure. Yeah, and it's so surprising that like this woman can be in all of these extreme circumstances that are so different and so relatable. Du Maurier is incredible. Have you read anything else by her?
No, and I have a copy of one of her other books. I can't remember what the title is, but this is making me think I should read it.
I
But then
know.
it's like I've never heard any of her other books talked about as much as this one, so I don't want to be disappointed.
Yeah. I know. So I have a couple others of her stuff that I've never delved into. I have Jamaica Inn, which I know Hitchcock
The
also
one I
turned
have.
into a movie.
Yeah.
And I think everyone was like, no, don't count this. This is like the movie is not don't good. No good. And I have a copy of My Cousin Rachel, which was a movie a couple years ago, and I'm
Right.
excited to see that one. Yeah.
Yeah, I meant to see that and then it just somehow like passed me by. But
Yeah.
okay, yeah, those are things to dive into. It's the Jamaica Inn, yeah, I've heard is like maybe not as good, but I do have a
Yeah.
copy, so I feel like I should read it.
The New York Review of Books has a series of like they're republishing books that only got like published once and kind of forgotten. So there's a collection of short stories by her. And I love this
Oh.
series because just like the spine is gorgeous. I love gorgeous looking books. But one of them is Don't Look Now, which was a Donald Sutherland film in the 70s.
Oh.
And I think she, a lot of her work, like The Birds was one of her stories. And I think she said, like, I only like two adaptations of my stuff, and it's the Rebecca movie and Don't Look Now, which I thought was interesting. It's so weird to think of like this woman who was publishing in the 30s, like lived until the 80s. She was around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Was she involved in the Hitchcock adaptation of Rebecca?
I don't think so. What the reason why I first watched it was because I wasn't a huge Hitchcock fan. I had seen like North by Northwest, and I was also just a contrary person, and I wanted to be like everyone likes Hitchcock, so I don't. But I had a Tumblr that was all about women screenwriters because same. And that one was credited as being written by Joan Harrison, who was like his script girl. She co-wrote a lot of his films. there's some concerns about maybe their relationship or like maybe she wasn't great towards other women. But that's why I watched it for the first time because it just had a woman writer. And
Yeah.
I mean, here we are now. What a so good.
Yeah. Wait, does your Tumblr still exist? Because I didn't know that he even had someone else helping him.
I mean, I haven't touched it in years, but yeah, I think it was like womenscreenwriters.tumblr.com. But that was humiliating because Harmony Korine, who did Spring Breakers, I thought was a woman. I was wrong.
Oh, that's understandable.
Because there's a character in Buffy named Harmony. That's where I first saw the name, and she's a
Yeah, I
girl.
think it reads as more feminine sounding. So I think I can see how you got there. You should make the Tumblr into like a coffee table book and then just have it like you can page through it.
That's true, because that was one of my favorite things to be like, that was written by a woman. Did you know Shrek was co-directed by a woman?
I did not know. I used to have a live journal and then yeah, I had it set to private and only like four people read it. And so it was just like a lot of like high school gossip and things that like my like two best friends would find funny. And then years later, I was like Googling the name of someone else that we went to high school with because I was like, oh, what are they up to now? And my own live journal came up, no longer private. I had to go through great lengths to get it deleted and removed from the internet because it was using a Hotmail email address that I had made when I was like 13. It was horrible. So.
Yeah, but also what a safe space was LiveJournal. I still occasionally get emails from LiveJournal of like your
Really?
friend has a birthday and I haven't logged into this website for like 13 years. Yeah. But She's still there. I'm looking at the moment where she first says, I could not believe I had said the name at last, saying the word Rebecca out loud. It's so fun to watch her take these like little baby steps because she's so testing the water. Yeah, it gave me a curious satisfaction. It acted upon me like a stimulant. I knew that in a moment or two, I should have to say it again. Like it's so internal. And I feel like normally I wouldn't like that, but it's such a vivid character. And yeah, so relatable.
Yeah, it feels exactly like when you're like asking about like if you're dating someone and you finally like you're like I'm gonna ask about your ex and it's like just scratching that itch like I shouldn't this like it would be so much better if I seemed too cool to care about this but like I have to.
I do care deeply. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She finally asks Frank about Rebecca. And she goes, Dear good Frank, my friend, my ally, I had been selfish and hypersensitive, a martyr to my own inferiority complex. That kills me.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so relatable. And like, I'm a very anxious person. And it's like when she kind of like what you were saying earlier, it's like when she does her daydreaming, it's like she is very much like she will spin out these like hypothetical things in her head. And they are long and multi-part. They have a beginning, middle, and end of like these horrible imagined things
Totally.
that will happen. And as someone that also does that, I'm like, yeah, that's how my brain feels. That's how it works.
Yeah, she and Maxim, their like courtship is going on these long drives in Monte Carlo, and she is checked out during all of them. She's just like so excited that she has been chosen. That's very much how I experienced like my first relationships. But there's also this sense of she's like, this was so high school to me, of like deliberating of like, can I reach my hand out to hold his hand? Like, and spending like a full hour trying to debate how to do this. It's, yeah,
Yeah.
so relatable.
Meanwhile, like Maxim is probably thinking about lunch.
Fully. Maxim is like, do we have to collect the rents? Something so simple. Yeah. Oh, I wish she would not always treat me as a child, rather spoilt, rather irresponsible, someone to be petted from time to time when the mood came upon him, but more often forgotten, more often patted on the shoulder and told to run away and play. I did not want to be a child. I wanted to be his mother. I wanted to be old. I skipped over that. I wanted to be his wife, comma, his mother. I wanted to be old.
The mother thing is like interesting because the thought of being like my husband's mother, I'm like, I don't want that at all.
Gross.
But she
And
wants
maybe
it.
it's, yeah, she wants it. Maybe it's partly because we don't know. You know, his mom, she's not there. They go to grandma's house like once. But yeah, like I know my boyfriend's mom, and every time I'm like, "Oh, she does this thing I'm doing. It's disgusting. I have to stop. I hate it." You
Yeah,
know?
I don't want to be mother.
No. Disgusting. Yeah. There's a moment where she is doing, it's sort of like Fleabag, where she is going through all of these thoughts and Maxim calls it out. And Maxim is like, do you know you were going through the most extraordinary antics instead of eating your fish? First, you listened as though you heard the telephone, and then your lips moved, and you threw half a glance at me, and you shook your head and smiled and shrugged your shoulders, all in about a second. Are you practicing your appearance for the fancy dress ball? You look like a little criminal. What is it?
Yeah, she was so fully in it that she was like fully acting it out.
Which I do, and I hate
I
that, but yeah.
absolutely have done that. I think also like one thing I was left with is like do we think that they didn't go back to me like the part that's in the future, are they not at Manderley because it like fully burned to a crisp and there's nothing left? Or do you think it was like a choice where they're like, we're leaving that in the past, we're not gonna live there anymore?
Oh, I think I assumed Manderley was gone, and that it's sort of because they talk about like we cannot return to the past, but I don't know, like. They very much are. It's sort of ironic that she spends so much of her life in this interior world not living. And then I think when she, like, when they are liberated by from the shackles of Manderley, I think they're really like going through the motions. And we're going over here and we're over here to this hotel and that hotel, and I wash his socks. But we're like, I think Maxim feels so out of it. He's sort of, I don't know if this is in the text, but in my mind, he's just kind of sitting there. Kind of dead behind the eyes. And you talked about having like characters so tied to place, and it's so interesting that like Maxim, I think it's like a landed gentry thing probably, but he is so in the land that when it is gone, he is gone.
Yeah, it's like, but it is like he seems so much happier like when he's on vacation, which I guess who isn't, but also like his life seems pretty cushy, so I don't, I mean, home probably is
Totally.
pretty nice for him as well. But yeah, it is, I think that's what just seemed so like striking to me is like he loves this place so much and yet like it doesn't really seem like he has a lot of happy memories there.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, we get so little detail, I think, about his life and his childhood. I think she might, envision him sort of running around, but he does feel like a person who's never had a childhood, who sort of popped out as a little
Yeah,
lord right
fully
away.
formed.
Yeah.
Like his sister, I think, for that reason, because it's like, oh, she just seems like so much more human and warm. I mean, while also being like a very specific kind of woman. A lot of hunting talk.
Yeah.
Let's just leave those poor animals alone.
I mean, I feel like that is sort of like the main hobby of landed gentry. But Beatrice, his sister, is a really funny character because she is like no filter, has fun. Maxim was always sort of like, yeah, we gotta deal with Beatrice and she's gonna say some uncouth things. But like you said, like she and her husband are having a blast at the costume party. She's like in silks and dancing and just kind of going wild. She's a party. Yeah.
I want to go to a party like that. I don't know anybody that has like a massive country estate that would throw an all-night ball, unfortunately.
No, I feel like the people I know with country estates are there because they don't want to see people and they don't want to have parties. They would have stayed in New York for that. Yeah.
1,000%.
Little tiny details make everything so much bigger. Like Rebecca twisted her father around the little finger, and she would have done the same with her mother had she lived. Spirit, you couldn't beat my lady for spirit.
Yeah, it felt very right that she grew up without a mom. I don't know, that just like made sense for her character. But
Holy.
it's like there were just so many things like written about Rebecca that also were really like appealing to me, where I was like, I want to be like that. And then there would be something that like was very off-putting, like sandwiched right in with it. But it's like there was so much about her that like, I don't know, felt really aspirational.
Yeah, and definitely aspirational to the narrator. She wants so badly to be Rebecca until she and Maxim finally talk about it, finally like break the spell. And Maxim is like, "No, I hated her. Do not be her." There's some beautiful line really early on where he's like, "Never grow up, never wear black satin and pearls." And that's a line that I love, even though it's so gross. I love that line. Like, never wear black satin and pearls. Yeah.
It's like, I think the first time I read it, I didn't see any of myself in Rebecca. And so it's like, I do want to wear black satin and pearls.
I just had a birthday recently and I am dealing with getting older and it's like, no, actually, like this is fun and cool and it's so beautiful to grow and change and be other and be different. And I was flipping through my notes earlier today and there's a line in here that eerily reflected something I recently said to my therapist of I feel like the self that I am and the self that I want to be are starting to inch closer and sort of meld.
I love
Right?
that. Yeah, and
Yeah.
that's like what's supposed to happen. Like I remember watching like Sex in the City as like a teenager, and like that's very much what they promised would happen. And it's true. It's like you just like you spend all of this time like being an architect of who you want to be. So it's like you get closer and closer.
I love that. I love that phrase, architect of who you want to be. That's delicious. Because I think there's a while where you feel like, and maybe some people carry this through your whole life, thinking that who you are, that you don't get a say in who you are and how you move through the world, that things are just as they are. And it's so nice when you realize that's not true.
Yeah, it's like that is so much a hallmark of being young. It's like you're just responding to the things you were given, and you're like very much just reacting to things. And then, yeah, you start to feel like you have more of a hand.
Yeah, which is sort of like the tragedy of this character is that she goes from being a child to, I've grown up Maxim in 24 hours. I'll never be a child again. Because she goes from like child to mother. There is no in between.
No, but at least when she becomes mother, she's like telling Danvers to fuck off and She's having hot salmon for lunch and she is calling the shots finally.
I know it feels sort of so Downton Abbey, but there's a moment where she's like, I am making the lunch menu. And you're screaming, you're so happy for her.
And then she's getting kissed hard on the mouth by Maxim finally, so.
Exactly. You're like, the kissing is fun, which I think, like, as a probably as a 17-year-old, was delicious. And luckily there's no sex, you know?
Thank goodness.
Oh yeah, this is when she's getting ready and she's doing. I had seen him do these things as ritual every evening I had spent at Manderley, but tonight they seemed to take on a special significance, as though the memory of them would last forever, and I should say long after, in some other time, I remember this moment.
I love it.
And then let's look at the very last line to see what it is. Oh. I'll read the last two. But the sky on the horizon was not dark at all. It was shot with crimson, like a splash of blood, and the ashes blew towards us with the salt wind from the sea.
Yeah, it's like you can taste it. And it's always like, I feel like there's so much blood referenced throughout the whole
Yes.
book of like things being the color of blood and
Yeah.
like kind of telling us about the violence that we're gonna.
Yeah. Even though, like, we never see it, there is no blood spilled, you know? Even Rebecca has this like fatal illness, and they say multiple times, like, you would have never guessed it from the outside. It's all.
And then even like when he does kill her, he's talking about the one time there is like, I guess he's cleaning the blood in the cottage, he washes it with seawater, which I just think is like also like just like a really nice detail. It's like, and it's salty, and then now it's like they're breathing in the salt wind. It's like
Yeah.
salt and blood.
Yeah. And there's like the wing that they're living in now, like, looks over the rhododendrons, but Rebecca's old room looks over the sea. So when Danvers opens that window and is like encouraging her to leap out, it's all about the waves, and like you can't even hear the sound of the sea from the other wing of the house, but it's all you can hear in this one. It's oh, so good.
Oh, so good.
Would you consider it required reading?
I absolutely would consider it required reading.
Yes. I don't know about like in high school. I don't think like in a curriculum, probably, unless it's like about writing, but everyone should read this book. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think it's like something we want like young women aspiring to, but a fantastic book. And I was really relieved. Like, I loved it just as much this time as I
I
did the
know.
first.
Yeah, that's such a scary thing when revisiting a favorite book. It is like I spend a lot of time on Book Talk, and for all of the like Otessa Moshfegh fans and all of the like yucky gross girls, who I am one, and I love those books, there's not enough love for this book on there, and they would eat it up. They would devour it.
I feel like it probably goes in cycles of like having a
Oh,
moment
for
and then
sure.
so
Yeah.
it'll.
It's 86 years old, maybe, and it's never gone out of print.
Wow, it earned it.
It earned it, like, just so. I love when a book is good. What can I say?
It's just so satisfying. I like flew through the second half of it. It was just like one of those things where I was like, I couldn't put it down.
Really, it is like it is a definition of like psychological suspense and thriller. Even though describing the events, it is like, no, this is a lady in a house making lunch menus, but it's so much more than that. Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing, like, because a lot of times I get really irritated when people try to like make suspense just by withholding information, but I do think this is like one time where it works because like it doesn't feel like the information's being withheld because she's going on this journey and learning pieces of it in real time. So I think it
Yeah.
works there.
So, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's all I have. Is there anything that you know you wanted to touch on or talk about that we haven't covered?
I don't think so. I feel like this was like we really like we covered a lot.
Yes. I find I keep putting my hand on the back of the book like I'm swearing myself in or something, which, yeah, I would. When you become president, you can pick whatever you want to swear on.
Is that real?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm probably making this up, but I think Thomas Jefferson like might have been sworn in on a Quran. I feel like that's not true.
That's fascinating. Okay.
I have to put this in because it's always on my mind. Thomas Jefferson, when he was an old man, was trying to impress a young woman. So he jumps over a fence and he like doesn't do it well, and he falls and he breaks his ankle. And I think that's hilarious.
Oh my God. That's incredible. That is an amazing, amazing little piece of information. That's so embarrassing.
I know, heck, that man. But where would you like to, do you have anything to plug? Where would you like to be found, if at all?
I have a Substack where I write essays, and I would love for more people to read it who are not related to me. So I'm putting that into the universe.
Awesome. Perfect. All right. Well,
Yay. Well,
thank you
this was
so
so
much.
fun. Yeah. Thank you for
Oh my
having
God, I
me.
loved it. Yeah. Thank you, Lena. This is, what a way to start a new year. I love how many times she and I just go like, ugh, in this episode. So it was, I mean, really, truly read this book. Thank you to everyone who listens. It's the new year. It's the new year. Thank you to everyone who listened this past year. My, at this point, only New Year's resolution is earn more than I did last year. So, ooh, if you'd like to support the podcast, please go to, what is it? buymeacoffee.com/required reading. Every little bit helps. And if you would like to follow me or find me anywhere, everywhere, go to at Erin R. Bowles. TikTok is still up for now. Who knew? Next week, Carter Hambly is joining me to discuss Redwall, another mice book. I'll see you then.